Beautiful song. That was lovely. I really appreciate that. So welcome all of you back again today for this part. A student will be like his teacher. Spooky thought, eh? So when I was teaching over in Bangladesh, I taught in a very conservative community of Muslims and Hindus, and they really, really, really wanted their children to come to my classes, but they didn't want them to become Christians. And they knew I was a Christian, and I taught about Jesus, and so they would have these little chats with their students. And my students told me about these chats, and they would tell their students how, you know, you go into this classroom, and you're there, and you realize this guy, he has English, you want to get the English from, but you don't want the Jesus. And just be on your guard, all those things he says about Jesus, just don't listen, and get the English part. Well, one day I was in my class, my class was that year, my class was pretty evenly divided between Muslims and Hindus. And at the end of each semester, I would give them some kind of prize for, perfect attendance or whatever. And I always gave these, like, either Bibles or Bible story books. And they're written in a different, so Bangla is one language technically, but there's a different language for Muslims and Hindus in Bangla. There's a lot more Arabic in the Muslim Bangla. It's a weird little thing. So I wanted to know, like, one of my students, a little girl, I wasn't sure, was she Hindu or was she Muslim? Because her last name, I wasn't sure about her last name, and I wasn't sure. And when they're little, they don't really wear different clothes. And so one day in class, we were having class, and I asked her, you know, if they were all writing something. I was like, so Laboni, are you a Hindu or are you a Muslim? And she says, yeah, she's a Hindu. Okay, so I wrote that down, and a little bit later, she raised her hand. She says, no, Aaron, sir, actually, she's a Christian. Oh, I said, that's great. That's good. And one by one, almost all the rest of the class, almost all of them raised their hands and said, we're Christians too. And it was kind of the beginning of a lot of feedback that I got from their parents. And it wasn't happy feedback. They were delighted with the English, but they said, we can't control our children. They just want to be Christians. And how good is that? Jesus said these words, these unbelievable words. He said, can the blind lead the blind? No, they'll both fall into the ditch. And then he says, a student will be like his teacher when he's fully taught. And Jesus, it's interesting he said that. It's also interesting his choice of coming to the world. He could have come as a king. He could have come as a preacher. John the Baptist was a preacher. He could have come as an emperor. He could have come as a businessman. He came as a teacher. He walked around and he taught. That's what he did. He taught his students, his 12 little students, a good size of classroom. And he taught them. And when he left, they were little Christs. You know, 11 of them were. And they went out from there and they changed the world because they had become like their teacher. So if a student becomes like his teacher, if this is true, which I believe it is, how do we develop ourselves so that when we are copied, the copy is beautiful? I remember the first time I stood in front of a classroom, it was out in Oregon. I had my 16 little students. They were in fourth and fifth grade, and they're still one of my favorite classes that I've ever taught because they were my first ones. And they were just amazing students, are amazing people today. And in the first day, you know, somebody was saying about, you know, that when all the preliminary, you know, the school board devotion, all this and all, and you're back in your classroom and the door is shut, and it's you looking at your students. I remember that moment, and I didn't have a lot of plans for this moment, and there they were looking at me, and I kind of assumed that there'd be somebody there to say, like, take out your math books, and well, nobody was there except for me. And so I just started to talk to them and tell them things, and we talked kind of vaguely about rules for a little bit, and then I said, you know what, maybe we should just tell stories here. And so I told them a story, and it was the story that came to my mind, and it involved this creepy little monster, and it was great fun. We loved it. It was a good story. And when I was done, my students asked me, Mr. Aaron, is it true? Well, it might be, I said. And okay, they said, that's interesting. So we went on to the rest of the day. And well, about 2 days later, one of the fathers of one of the students calls me up and said, Aaron, my son is telling me that there's this creepy monster here in the valley. And I told him it's not true, and he said it is true. Mr. Aaron said. Oh, dear. So then I had a little talk with my students that, well, you know what, it could have been, man, it's not true. It was hard, right? And I was 20. And I was not used to having people just copy me and admire me and just do what I said. And these people are following me. That's a terrifying thought. And I guess it was probably the time when I started asking these questions, the hard kinds of questions, like, why am I even teaching? What are the motivations for my actions and my ideals? And is it the praise of men? What fear of failure? Who are my hearers? Who am I even? I think it's part of the complex process we refer to as growing up. But you as teachers get to do that in front of your students. It's kind of like you step there into the spotlight. And in a few weeks we will, all of you. You're going to step into the spotlight and under the magnifying glass in front of children who will follow who you are, not who you say you are, or who you wish you were. So here you are, here we are, called to the greatest work you can imagine. Unbelievable influence. And what if our students become exactly like their teacher? So am I real? How do I know? I'm a pretty tricky person to ask about the motives of Aaron Durstein, because I give myself the benefit of the doubt. I give myself the best of motives, even for my worst actions. And to me, I'm always a hero, more or less. Maybe I won't say that, but you know, I guess I say that to tell you that I'm not a very good judge of my own self. Maybe my heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And so I have developed 5 tests. They're questions that I ask myself, and I ask myself these questions repeatedly. And these tests, these questions that I ask myself, help me understand who I am. And I want to share them with you because the stakes are really high. Who are you? Do you even know? And how do you tell? So, a few years ago, my dad and brothers and I were in Norfolk, Virginia, and we were pawn shopping, which is a great thing to do if you're in Norfolk, Virginia. And we were out in this parking lot, my dad and brothers and I, and this guy comes up to us and he's like, do you want to buy some silver? Oh, yeah, I mean, hey, is it for cheap? Yeah, reasonable, you know, it's got some silver coins. So he came up and he had a big sleeve of silver coins, and they were actually really in really good shape. 1879, 1921, back in the pure silver dollar stages. Liberty dollars, actually really nice coins in nice shape. And we're like, oh, so how much do you want for these? There's probably 50 in a sleeve or something like that. Nah, 30 in a sleeve. And he's like, well, he'd sell these sleeves for $100 a piece. Oh, well, how many sleeves do you have? We're making a deal here. Yeah, it feels a little fishy that we're out in the parking lot, but I mean, if we don't buy them, someone else probably will. And He has four sleeves. So he walks away with $400, and we have these coins. We're like, man, what a haul. Next pawn shop, we're just kind of looking, you know, oh, you have some silver coins. How much are you getting for those? Well, they're getting $30 or $40 a piece for them, but they said just the silver alone in them is worth like $19 a piece. Oh, wow, this is great. We just made a deal where our profits are in the thousands, maybe approaching 10,000. Okay, we're kind of looking at each other. Yeah, it's all our good day's work. And the guy from the pawn shop is like, you know, he said it's really crazy. The last while here in Norfolk, they don't know where they're getting them, but there's these guys that are peddling steel silver dollars, and they're the best done replicas they've ever seen. You can't tell by looking. In fact, they look better than the real ones. Oh, is that what we say? So like the Liberty dollars. Yeah, the Liberty dollars. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, how do you tell if they're fake? They said you can't. The only way to tell if they're fake, I mean, you can't by looking at them. The only way to tell if they're fake is if they are magnetic. Silver's not magnetic. Okay. So we just left the sleeves there in the back of the rig. We have this bad feeling, shall we say. We get home, get a magnet, and check the coins. You can't tell by looking at them, but what they are is shown by what controls them. You know, I have a pure silver coin here, 99.9%. This magnet does nothing to it. Nothing. There's no attraction at all. There's no control at all. And I don't know how to, I think we're a little bit like a coin. You know, we can look great even on the outside, and then there's this powerful force that pulls us, that wants to control us, tries in every way possible to control us, and it's Satan, it's the world, it's ourselves, it's the flesh, it's all these things. I think maybe we're born with a lot of iron mixed in with the silver. Maybe Adam and Eve were created pure silver, but we're born with a lot of iron. But what we feed grows. And when we feed that dark, dirty part of our nature, the iron content goes up until when the world comes along, it can control us. And that's the first question that I ask myself. What are you controlled by? What controls you? You can say attracted, maybe, but I think, I don't know if, you know, in this flesh, in this body that we live in, I don't know if we're ever going to get to the place where we're not attracted at all by this dark force of the world. But we, with the power of God, don't have to let it control us. We are created with this tremendous capacity to love God and nature and beauty and people and music and all these things. But the devil has taken every beautiful thing that God has made and made a corrupt or corrupted and made this kind of dark side to it. Do we find ourselves loving the real or being controlled by the copy that the devil made? What attraction are you letting control your own life? It's not a sin to feel the tug of the world, but have you fed that thing inside you to the point where that force, that dark force, controls the actions and the thoughts that you do? That's the first test, and it's good to look at yourself like you're looking at one of your friends whom you care about, and like look at your actions like they're somebody else's, and ask, who is controlling you? So that's the first question. What are you controlled by? Now, there's a book that I read, and I wanted to bring it here to show you all, but I couldn't find it on my shelf before I left. How many of you have read the book The Long Walk by this Rawinks, or I don't know how to say his name, Saul? A few of you. Good deal. The ones of you who haven't, go and buy that book. I know you've heard that already this week. It's written, The Long Walk, by some Polish guy. I'm going to try to, is Sławomir Rawicz, maybe? To all of you Polish people, I'm sorry. It's terrible. So this is a story about this guy, this Polish guy, in a death camp back in the Gulag days of the Soviet Union in somewhere in Siberia, and he's caught and he's there and he's going to be worked to death, and he'd rather not be worked to death. He thinks he might escape, and the story is about their escape when they leave this camp. And they travel south instead of east, which is ridiculous. It's foolishness. Because they cross the width of Russia and meet this person along the way and take her with them too. And it's an amazing story. Good story to read your students. Cross Mongolia and the Gobi Desert. These couple of ex-convicts cross the Himalaya Mountains all the way into northern India. It's an unbelievable, it's an impossible feat. But what was interesting about this story is while they were there in this death camp, this labor camp, this Polish guy spent the months leading up to their escape looking at his fellow prisoners and choosing who would go with him. And it was his process of elimination is fascinating. He looks at this person, he's like, not him. Because he gets angry when he's shortchanged. But not him because he's grumpy. Not this one because of another. And he whittled it down. And finally he chose, I think maybe it was five or something. Six, I forget all the details. A small little group of people who were exemplary in every way. And it was good he did, because when they left, They needed every member of the group. They would have failed if any one of those people would have been gone. And there's not even a ghost of a chance that they would have made it by themselves. Not a ghost. One-on-one, not a chance. And the book is basically a proof of that. And I think about that. Who are your friends? That's the second question that I ask myself, because our friends change as time goes on. We all know our friends are important, but maybe our friends, the people whom we choose, maybe they're one of the greatest determiners of our destiny. Pause and think about your friends. The people whom you spend the most time with, do they love God more than anything in this world? Are they respectful of their parents and churches? Do they routinely do things that they know are wrong? Are they obeying the standards of their churches? Do they encourage you to be good or bad? Now, quite obviously, are we that kind of friend? A good friendship has much more value than the sum of its parts. Those five people together were an unstoppable force. Five people on their own were dead. Look hard at your life. Who your friends are a very good indicator of who we ourselves are. I think our friends may be like mirrors. We look into them and we see maybe who we are, actually. And I'm sure you've seen this. Sometimes we all have people like this in our lives. Sometimes you have a troubled relative or a student or a somebody and you're brought to this new location or place or whatever, and there's this other troubled person, really troubled. They're bad. They're and somehow or other, within 30 seconds of entering the same room, these people have found each other, and there they are whispering sweet nothings to each other about how unfair their church is and bad their parents are. And We tend to attract the people that we are like. And many of you are going to be moving to a new community here in the next few weeks, probably. be like that Polish guy. Look around that community and find people who will help you win in the war you're entering. Choose your friends very wisely. Good friends are rare. You're not going to have that many in your life, probably. Great friends. But grab them when you find them. And if you look for them, you will find them. Probably in unexpected places, but you'll find them. You can't go without friends. And fill your life with good friends. So what are you controlled by? Who are your friends? And how are your relationships with people closest to you? That's the third question that I ask myself. So in my spare time, while I'm trying to support my teaching habit, I weld. And I like to weld. And welding, there's so many things. If you're sitting there in your darkened welding helmet and you're thinking about how you wish you were teaching, and there's so many little analogies that come to you. Maybe you've seen me do this before, I don't know, but I like this little. So one of the things you use when you're building equipment is you use flat bar. It's just a really simple, flat bar is easy to make. It's relatively inexpensive. It's good for a lot of things. So this is a little piece of flat bar. Flat bar is unique in that it has a tremendous strength one way, like the up and down way, the long way, and very little strength this way. Like even this piece of flat bar, I can bend with my hands. It can feel it flexing in my hands. If you're building equipment and this is your load-bearing way right here, it'll just bend right down. But this way, it's strong, right? So I think this is maybe a little bit like a person. Maybe it's like me. Like I have strength. Well, every one of us has a strength. Maybe it's this way, but we're kind of floppy. When it comes to this way, right? And we're that way. Right now in the community that you go to, or that you're in, wherever you find yourself, God, in his brilliance, is going to find somebody that's exactly opposite you. He looks like you, but where you're strong this way, he's strong this way. In fact, he's going to be so opposite from you, he might even be the chairman of your school board. And he's going to be so, or your co-teacher, or one of your moms or dads that you're going to be dealing with. They're going to be so opposite from you, you're like, God, I can't do this guy. This is ridiculous. There was a guy like that back in my church. That's kind of why I went to teach school over here. Right? And you're both there going along in your life. He's floppy here, you're floppy here. It's just, and you're weak, right? But God in his wisdom has another way. You can do this. Right? These are two pieces welded together. And there's a it's interesting thing about a weld. All of you welders know this. If I would take a die grinder and I would cut this weld on this end, it would spring apart. Something about when you weld metal together puts the metal under tremendous tension. Like, I've watched great plates buckle and inch and a half steel buckle and bulge with the force of a weld. But when it's welded together correctly, that tension is put to great use. And this piece of metal, with these tiny little tack welds on there, or not really tacks, but a little weld, this is strong. Every direction. There's no weak angle on this piece, and together they make a relationship, right? That is strong. And I think we tend to look around the community and find people with the same strengths and weaknesses we are, and that's great. I mean, we're allowed to do that. We have friends. I mean, that's okay. But to really make a strong relationship, you're going to want to find a way to work with those people with whom you disagree. And I think that might be impossible without God as the welder. God is going to be faithful to bring these people to you because you need them. Okay, how do we tell if we're successful at that? That's a great theory, but it's really hard to tell if we've been successful. I don't know how to tell always, but here are some things that I ask myself. Think about how you affect other people. Look in your rearview mirror at the relationships that you've had. How, when we get to know someone and spend time with them, do they become better or worse? Do you become better or worse? Are your relationships improving or are they getting worse? Are you looking farther and farther afield for friends because the relationships close to you are not working out, right? Nobody in this church understands me, but now there is this person out in Oregon who understands. Or, well, I mean, there are exceptions, you know. And are our best friends thousands of miles away? Because they're really hard. It's really hard to have that iron sharpening iron friendship with somebody who you just, you know, message or something. Are those your friends? Who are you? And how about the people who are very close to you? How about your dad and your mom and your siblings and that preacher who's kind of a pain? I mean, there are preachers that are pains. And we're sometimes pains. I mean, this is good test, and it will tell you a lot about yourself. There is no mistake in where you find yourself. It says God places the members in the body as it pleases Him. Unbelievable. That I sometimes talk to God and I'm like, God, did you notice this guy? Did you notice him? I don't think that. I mean, why did you let him move in here? It seemed like that would have been a lightning strike moment to Mordecai told Esther, maybe you are come for the king, to the kingdom for just this time. I think that's God's message to you. So God uprooted you from where you are, even if that's just the life you were living, even if you're teaching in your same community, or maybe He moved you to another community. He uprooted you from this place to this place for his glory. Maybe you find yourself in a classroom or a community that's far less than ideal. Maybe that's why you are there. Maybe that's why you're called to that place. The devil wants us to think it is hopeless because of the potential for miracles. God loves doing miracles. God will be faithful in bringing the people into your life and your classroom that you need to balance you. But you have to be totally yielded to God and let Him weld you. And how the hell that works out is kind of a bloody process, maybe. But look closely at the relationships with the people closest to you and let God be the welder. So, we have, who are you controlled by? Who are your friends? How are your relationships with people closest to you? Number four, how do you respond when someone corrects you? I thought when I became a teacher, I thought the students got corrected and the teachers were the correctors. That was kind of my idea. But you will be corrected as a teacher. You go into this community and your ideals are high and some dad sits you down and says, son, we have a problem. And it's you. And or maybe you will find yourself being corrected. And what we do with those, how we respond is one of the other great determiners of our destiny. So we have a king, story of a king, and he was a great king. He was maybe the greatest king in the world in his time. And he was there ruling his kingdom. And along came the voice of God talking to this king. And he came to this king stumbling out of the desert with a long white beard, and he said to this king, let my people go. And Pharaoh looked down from his throne and saw Moses. What a loser. And he didn't even hear the voice of God because all he saw was this man. And he said, no, sorry, but not happening. And resisted the voice of God and lost his life, his kingdom. Everything he valued was completely destroyed because all he saw was Moses. There was another king. Again, probably the greatest king in the world in his day. And he's there doing his thing, and he does something wrong, and along comes the voice of God and says to him, David, you made a mistake. And David looked down from his throne, and there's little old Nathan down there. But he doesn't just see Nathan, he sees God. He hears the voice of God. And he says, I'm sorry, God. I'm really sorry. And he was forgiven and saved, and the course of his life was corrected. There was another man. This one had done nothing wrong. And the accusation came anyway, because sometimes it does come anyway, even when we've done nothing wrong. He was believed guilty and he was thrown into prison, but he was innocent. But in prison, he never lost his faith in God. There was no bitterness or blame that we know of, because he saw the great God that was working behind the scenes, and he trusted. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. How do you say that when you gave many years of your life as a slave and a prisoner? How do you say that? And I wonder, that's probably one of the greatest tests you're going to face as a teacher. Unjust and hurtful accusations. But you know what? God never, that didn't slip by his knowledge. He saw it. He watched it happen. He loves you. He saw it. He didn't miss a second of any of that. And he can redeem it. And all we have to do is trust him. You know what, God? They're coming to crucify me. If you did do something wrong, we'll make it right. I mean, of course, don't be Pharaoh. Be David. But if it is unfair, you can still do the right thing. You can do it every day. And God will redeem it into something beautiful. If you don't retreat into bitterness and hate. Look beyond the voice that comes to you, beyond the accusation, and seek to hear the voice of God. And I think if we seek that, we will find it. So, how much do you need to control your life? That's point number five. This is a tough one, because people are wired very differently. And there are some people who kind of are more the command man type, and they like to know where the coffee filters are, and if you put them in the wrong drawer, well, that's about time you put them back in the right drawer. And these are good things. I mean, we need these people, and I'm not really talking about that, but I sense in my own life, and I see this in my students, I see this in people, the farther that we find ourselves from God, the more we need to control everything around us. And if there's one kind of area of my life that I'm not giving to God, this is me. This is just kind of this vicious little me here doing what I want to do. The rest of my life is rigidly in control. And maybe the people in my life are rigidly controlled. I mean, this is a terribly unfortunate thing to say, but I mean, we've seen, say, fathers who are not being faithful, who are kind of vicious with their families. And I don't know. I don't know what all the correlations are there. But when we find we can't forget the mistakes of others, we can't forgive them. Nope, they did it. Nope, they did it. I'm not letting. Or we can't let go of little things that we perceive to be unfair. No, that wasn't fair. I don't have to put up with that. I don't deserve that. That's never. How about, yeah, all the little ways that we can be in control. We pick people apart in our own minds. We pick them apart to other people. I don't know. If we find ourselves there, maybe that's a good time to, I don't know, to give the rest of our lives to God. So I want to, it's a very good test. This is the last one's a very good test to see who we really are. Can I let God be in control and just live one day at a time? I think back to the lilies. Can we be a lily? Consider the lily. So here's a little bonus thought. Real silver is the greatest conductor of electricity. Pure silver. And I like that. Steel is pretty poor. I mean, you'll get shocked through steel, but it's not great. Silver's amazing. And I love to think of us as teachers being the conductor, right? There's the great, beautiful, wonderful, unbelievably powerful source of power, and that is God. And we're all we are is we're trying to conduct that down in a palatable way to children and to young people. And when we're silver, when we're truly, when we're pure, when we let God be the cleanser and the healer, then the power comes through. The image of God comes through clearly. And our students, when they look at us, they see God. And when they see God, they're changed and they learn to love Him. So I realize that today is the day that the board is here. So I want to take just a wee little detour here and say a few words to the school board. So I know you all want to... I've been on the school board there in our church for the last number of years now, and it's kind of frustrating because I identify as a teacher, and I'm supposed to be on the school board, and so it's this complicated business. But here's a little something. Well, all you teachers, number one, your school board wants you to succeed, and they want you to succeed really, really much. Like, they pray, and they try, and they cry, and they hope, and they... And probably especially the ones that quit driving their combines and came here. But school board, if you want to equip your teachers, help them go to school meetings, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's great. And that's, we're here. It's a wonderful thing. But long term, if you want to equip your teacher, much more is shown than can be taught with words. Let's say you're a mini barn shop owner. And you have a new employee, and you sit him down. Let's say you even have a week of meetings with him. And you bring in people, and you chat with them about the use of the hammer and the nailer. And you talk about techniques, and you talk about pitfalls, and you talk about, you know, the way your mind should be as a mini barn builder. You know, all these things, right? And then the day comes, and you open up the bay in the shop, and you point him in the direction. You say, that's your shelf of tools right there. There's the nails. There's the lumber. Have at it. We expect some barns. In fact, we expect perfect barns. These are the most valued. This is the most valuable stuff we have. We want it to be right. It might work. I mean, there are people who make that work. And thankfully, with teaching, we have the Spirit of God. And we have a lot of other things. But if you really, really want the mini barn builder to be successful, you find the best mini barn builder on your crew, and you say, go work with that guy for 2 weeks. At the end of 2 weeks, he will have learned more about building barns than the 5 books that you gave him. And teaching is even more complex than the building of barns. It's a really hard thing to tell somebody how to do. But it's an easy thing to show somebody how to do. And I think if you look around in your community and you look at teachers, ex-teachers, pick the best teachers that ever taught in your school, and you call them up and you say, no, you know what? We have this is the rule of your community, as unbreakable as that school starts in August or September. They're going to come, they're going to work with this teacher for the first 2 weeks of his school. They're going to show him the rules, how to teach. They're going to give him feedback, what does respect look like. We've been doing this in North Carolina for a little while, and there's more and more schools across the country doing this thing, this equipping of their students. And maybe it looks a little different in your community. Maybe you'll have a bit of a... But the recipe feels like it needs to be... experienced teacher walking with the inexperienced teacher in the classroom every day for that first week or two. Anyway, we've been doing this in a number of places, and it feels like it's cheating. It's so effective. It really does. Like, this teacher comes, they're green, they're terrified. 2 weeks later, or even a week later, they're standing on the shoulders of the other teacher, and they go ahead and teach. And often we as boards are like, man, that's just messy, and I'm trying to, you know, I have 10 other balls I'm trying to juggle here. How about we just have the older room teacher just kind of check in on him? Well, you know what? The older room teacher is teaching his own classroom, right? He doesn't have the luxury of going and sitting the whole day with the new teacher and giving him really constructive feedback. Or maybe even teaching some classes for him and letting him, you know. So I take that, make that extra little, it's just an encouragement. And if you don't do it, and if you're in a if you're a teacher in a community and that doesn't happen, then it's up to you to reach out to people with experience and ask for advice. I think that's one of the great things that teachers, it's a trap. Why do we do this? We're like, it's the devil, I think. He whispers to us. We're there in the classroom, and the devil's like, no, it's you. This is you. This is all you. Got to do it. Got to You got it. Well, yeah, you're responsible, but call up everybody you know and ask them for their advice. And when you're having a problem with a student, call their parents before quick. And talk to them and tell them how much you love their student and how. Anyway, well, here I just keep rambling. Let's finish this up. So, be a conductor. Equip your new teachers. Okay. A student will be like his teacher when he is fully taught. This verse is a promise to me and to you, because we ourselves are only students. But we sit at the feet of the greatest teacher that ever lived, the master teacher. He knows us and he loves us. He created us. He holds you in his hands, and he's given you this opportunity to teach. And he promises us that if we keep trying, he will transform us into somebody just like him. God bless you all.